Good morning, everyone. This meeting called to order on May 22nd, 2014 at 9:05 a.m. Before proceeding with any business, I believe Mr. Smith has a statement to make.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I want to welcome everybody to the meeting today, and I do have a statement to read. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the office of the Secretary of State as required by Chapter 551 Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I'd like for this fact to be noted in the official record of the meeting. I want to join the chairman and the commission in welcoming everybody to our meeting this morning. It looks like we've got a standing room only crowd, which is great. We're going to kick the meeting off, as is normal and customary, with some awards and recognitions of colleagues across the agency that are really doing extraordinary things on behalf of your fish and wildlife and parks. And we appreciate colleagues and families that have come in to help celebrate that. After that part of the meeting is over, the chairman's going to adjourn the meeting, and those who want to leave can do so at that time. And then he'll call the meeting back into session for the specific business that the commission is going to take up. For those of you who have not been to a commission meeting before and are here for a specific action item that you want to speak to at the appropriate time, the chairman will call you up to the podium by name. I will ask you to state your name and who you represent, your position on the item, and then you'll have 3 minutes to address the commission. And so we'll ask that you keep it to that. We've got a little red light, yellow light, green light system, and green means go, and yellow means start to wind it down, and red means stop. If everybody can honor that for the commission, they would appreciate that so we can accommodate the time. But we're appreciative that you're here, and thanks for joining us today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Carter. Before we really get going, we have a few items to take care of before Carter does the awards. But last night, we had the Texas Land Stewards Award here in Austin, and I want to first of all thank all the Parks and Wildlife staff who helped with that. It was outstanding. Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation did a great job, and you know these land stewards are our partners. They steward our most precious resource, land, and it's an honor to get to see them and to get to see what they've done and hear their story. So, anybody that didn't go last night, you missed a great evening, and thanks everybody for helping out and getting that put together. Next is approval of the minutes from the previous commission meeting held March 27, 2014, which have already been distributed. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Martin Jones, second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Next is the acknowledgement of list of donations which have been distributed. Is there a motion for approval?
So
Scott and Morian, second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next is the acknowledgement of list of contracts which have been distributed. Is there a motion for approval?
So
Morian. Lee, second.
I'll take it.
All right, Lee. Okay.
I'm in Joseph's seat.
Okay. You're mixing me up right now. Let me get my train of thought going again. All right. All in favor, please say aye. Any opposed? Hearing that, motion carries. Now, special recognition, retirement, and service award. Carter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, for the record, my name is Carter Smith, and thanks for the opportunity to be with you all this morning. We want to kick off this meeting with a couple of special presentations, and some of the commissioners that have been with us for a while may recall that each April, Whole Earth Provisioning Company, one of the leading purveyors of outdoor camping, hiking, backpacking, outdoor equipment, honors your state parks by designating that Texas State Parks Month in all of their 9 stores around the state. They celebrate it. They promote it. They encourage their customers to get out and visit state parks. They give them every ample opportunity to do so. They invite our colleagues from parks to come in and answer questions from the public. And then they make a special contribution to support your state parks. And it's just been a wonderful part of their employee culture. Their employees love their state parks. They use them actively, and they do everything they can to help promote them and conserve them. The other thing that they do is they bring in the Banff Film Festival each year. And this is this amazing collection of shorts on these extraordinary outdoor activities. The movies are absolutely amazing. And they host that down at the Paramount here in Austin on a Saturday and Sunday. Wednesday night, and each year they give an opportunity for our state parks colleagues. This year, Brent and Russell were there to help talk to the audience about their state parks. And so Whole Earth has just been a phenomenal partner. Walter Wakefield, one of the owners, is with us today, as is Holland Jones, who's a second-generation family member. His dad and uncle helped found the company. They all have connections state parks, the Jones family in particular, their cousins' ranch, the Kickapoo Cavern State Park and natural area that was ultimately transferred over to the department, so they've got a long history. And so I want to ask Walter and Holland to come up and make a special presentation, and let's thank them for their support of your state parks. They're great partners. Very nice. I don't know if many of you have had a chance to meet Maria Rojo, who is our Director of International Affairs, and she works closely with government officials in Mexico and Canada, really is just our liaison for international work and does a great job. We all know that fish and wildlife ignore geopolitical boundaries. Commissioner De Hoyos, I know, knows her. Maria has been very involved with the Board of Governors table and the wildlife table and representing the department in that regard. And she's just been an amazing ambassador and emissary for the department and all of our issues, again, crossing country borders. Today, she's getting honored by the Coast Guard for her work with helping them reach out to Spanish-speaking audiences. The Coast Guard maintains a database of boating accidents, and obviously we all use that to help us with promoting safety and getting a better handle on how we do that better. And as the Spanish-speaking demographic has grown in our country, and along with the requirement to fill out boating accident forms, the Coast Guard recognized I needed some help to reach out to those groups, develop an appropriate reporting form for Spanish only speakers. And so they came to Cody Jones, our assistant chief in law enforcement. Cody knew exactly to go to, and that was Maria. And so she's worked with the Coast Guard over the last year to help develop this form, and the Coast Guard is here today to honor her with their Partners Pride Award. And so I want to ask Maria to come forward as we acknowledge her for her important work. So congratulations, Maria. So, Maria, I don't want you to take it personally that we took three pictures of you and six of the check, Okay. All right. So we've got one colleague that has retired on us, and he's left footprints all over the state in terms of influence and outdoor recreation, and that's Andy Goldblum. Andy's been with us almost 30 years, 28 years. He started out in state parks as a planner. Andy produced the first economic impact study in Texas on the benefits of state parks to local communities. You've seen subsequent reports that have come out on that from the comptroller, who issued one a few years ago. We're currently in the throes of another one in partnership with Dr. John Crompton at Texas A&M. And that study will come out and available to the commission here later on in the fall. Andy, again, working with a variety of things inside state parks, created the Greenways program, helping to promote access to public waters. Two of the big rails to trails projects up at Lake Mineral Wells and Caprock Canyon State Parks came about as a function of Andy's leadership. Most recently, you will know him from his work in the recreational grants and trails programs. And over the last few years, Andy has capably administered, over nearly $50 million of grants to communities and partners to help get people outside. And so Andy has lived that mission of life better outside, and we're honoring him today with his retirement and thanking him for his 28 years of proud service to the department. Andy Goldblum. Andy. So that's it with retirements, which that's good. I'm proud to announce that. So now we're going to acknowledge folks for their tenure, continuing tenure, I might add. We're going to start off with Chris Hunt, who's a graphic designer. And she got a little fan club, obviously, and so that's good. Chris has been with us 20 years. I love this story. She said that she was over here hiking the trails at McKinney Falls, and she came out of the woods, and she noticed this, in her words, rather odd-looking building, and she wandered in, and anyway, what is it, of course, our headquarters, And they offered her a job in something called ISS. I have no idea what that stands for, but her job was to create slides. You remember that? Remember slides you put in a carousel? You know, you have to turn them over backwards and upside down. You'd always screw it up. Half your slides were the wrong way. So anyway, Chris was put in place to fix the rest of us who couldn't handle the carousels and creation of slides. And she quickly worked her way up as a really, really accomplished and creative graphic designer, and you'll find that inside the agency. There are all these wonderful creative geniuses that are in our communications team that produce these amazing products, and she works in our creative and interactive services, and you see her handiwork in marketing and ads and the magazine and the outdoor annual and publications, and just does a masterful, masterful job of doing that. We're proud of her 20 years of service. Chris Hunt. Chris. Now, Chris, I'm going to have to give you a hint. You don't want to make your division director chase you down the aisle to congratulate you. So it's at least not while the commission's in session. All right, Chris? So 20 years from now, let's get that one right, all right? Okay, our next one. Leo Kunkel, what a great jack of all trades. He's down at Goliad State Park, and if you need a plumber, a carpenter, someone to build something, to fix it, to operate a backhoe, to fix the park after flood events, put in campsites. I mean, Leopold is your guy, and he's a maintenance specialist with us. He's a very, very proud steward of that very, very special place. You know the significance, obviously, of Goliad and the missions and General Zaragoza's birthplace and the Fannin Battleground, and candidly, we just couldn't take care of that place without him, and we're very, very proud to celebrate Leopold's 20 years of service. Leopold Kunkel, 20 years. Our next colleague, Jay Hess, who many of you know is our superintendent at Lockhart State Park. He's one of those parks and wildlife lifers. Started out in high school and worked for the agency in a variety of fashions, collecting entrance fees, working at the swimming pool as a lifeguard, came into the Austin office and worked for a while. In 96, he was hired as a full-time park ranger there at Lockhart State Park, went on to work at Bastrop and Bisher State Parks as a park specialist. Was an interim manager at Guadalupe River State Park, and then in 2004 he was promoted to the park superintendent just down the road in Lockhart, the position that he holds now. And it's a very special and unique park, probably the only park in which we've got a active golf course and a swimming pool that the community holds near and dear, some wonderful CCC buildings, great hiking trails. The community just loves their state park, and Jay's done a masterful job of developing those relationships with everybody and helping to promote it. We're proud of his leadership and honored that he's been with us for 20 years. Jay Hess, 20 years of service. Jay. Our next colleague, Susan Wagner, who's with our HR team, just epitomizes the spirit of this agent. She's been with us for 20 years. She started out as an accounting clerk in boat registration and really promoted rapidly there, made customer service to counties and boat owners, just really a hallmark of her service to this agency. She transferred over in 2000 to the HR division, working in training. Susan is part and parcel of every new employee orientation, one of the first people that anybody come to the agency when they come into headquarters have a chance to meet. She's been part of our Natural Leaders program, our Employee Recognition Awards, our survey on employee engagement. Susan is the one behind the scenes always and out front, too, helping to represent us and make sure that all of our employees feel comfortable and supported here at the department. Also, I'm proud to say that she was recently appointed to serve a two-year term for the Governor's Commission for Women State Agency Council, and we're proud to have her representing the agency in that capacity. And today, we're celebrating 20 years of service. Susan Wagner with our HR team. Susan. Our next colleague, Cindy Shifkins, has been with us for three decades. She works in our IT team. She's started off her career as a programmer analyst, and of course, at that time, we still had IBM punch cards. You know, the computers were about the size of this room. Cindy was responsible for, you know, keeping the railroad going. And so when things broke down with computers in the middle of the night, It was Cindy who got the call to come over here at 2 a.m. and make sure things were fixed by the next day. And thankfully, those days are in the past, I hope, for Cindy. She's been involved with everything from mainframe applications to web development, the development of all of our financial software and business software. Cindy, again, the expert programmer behind the scenes helping to make that work. And all of you as business people know the criticality of having those back functions work very, very well to support all the work in the field. She's moved upwards through the division very, very steadily. She's now a systems analyst, five with the IT team, a proud member of the agency's green team that worked very hard on recycling and other important environmental initiatives here at the headquarters and locally. And today we're honoring Cindy for 30 years of service to your Texas Parks and Wildlife. Cindy. The last item of business that we have is it's my privilege to introduce a great friend of the outdoors and a great friend of youth in Texas, and that's Leon McNeil. Leon is from San Antonio. He's the founder and president of City Kids Adventures, and Leon is one of the most wonderful people that you'll ever meet. He's went to Abilene Christian on a football scholarship out there. Met friends that introduced him into the outdoors and just turned him on to a love of fishing and hunting and camping and wildlife. But what Leon did was take it another step further. As an accomplished teacher, he recognized the most important thing that he could do was help give kids who, like him, had grown up in challenging environments and help broaden their horizons, expose them to an area outside their communities, teach them incredibly important lessons on accountability and discipline and leadership and self-esteem and morale. And with those lessons then came rewards, and the rewards were opportunities for service, to give back, and then also to experience things that Leon loves in the outdoors and hunting and fishing. And he and his wife, Letitia, have just done an extraordinary job with this leadership program, City Kids Adventures, and we've invited Leon as one of our core partners to come share a few words about the very, very important work about what he's doing, because what Leon McNeil is doing, he's changing lives. Leon McNeil.
Thank you for allowing us to be here and speak with you guys. Mr. Smith did a wonderful job of kind of explaining a little bit about our program. Our whole mission is to develop youth, and we use the outdoors to try and do that. We run a mentoring program. Kids start in our program from the sixth grade, and they stay with us and hopefully until they get to these gentlemen's age, which they're at A&M now in college, and they go on to aspire to do good things with their lives. The outdoors, for me, is just a blessing to be out there. Growing up in the inner city and seeing all the things that you have to deal with in the inner city, the outdoors gave me an opportunity to have a release. And I saw how it impacted my life, and I felt, you know, kids also need to have an opportunity to be able to do that and experience that. Through partnership with Texas Parks and Wildlife, you guys gave us our first grant to get started, and I saw the impact that it had in terms of the things we're able to do and expose the kids to the different opportunities, hunting and fishing and hiking and traveling. We kept tweaking the program over the years, and we realized that the kids need so much more than just outdoor lessons. And with the outdoors, we were able to use that to hook the kids and to get them to buy in to changing their lives and letting them understand that this world we live in is a wonderful place. And if you want things in life, you can work for it. And our motto is hard work has many rewards. As stewards of the environment, like we refer ourselves to, we have partnerships with a lot of landowners. And one of the things that we make sure we do is give back. It's not a what we refer to as a government program where the kids get something for nothing. They understand the importance of when you have the opportunity to visit someone's property and fish and hunt, that's a privilege. And with that privilege comes a lot of responsibility. And so we make our kids engage in service projects. If the landowner needs some trash picked up, if he needs a fence painted or something to that effect, then we make sure our kids understand that this is part of your hard work, this is part of your reward, and this is our way of saying thank you for giving us an opportunity. Because oftentimes kids in the inner city, if you simply give them an opportunity, they'll respond. And so we found that over the years with the young men and women that we deal with. Our program services boys and girls. And we try and teach them that they can involve and enjoy being outdoors with each other without having to think about each other in very, very negative ways. And so with that said, I'm going to show a video. We're going to show a video and kind of give you an overview of our program, the different activities that we are involved in, hunting, fishing, hiking, traveling, all things involved. We kind of rotate through our program. Every 5 years, we go to a different location in the United States. Last year, we went to Alaska for 5 weeks with 9 kids. And then this year, we're going to Niagara Falls. And so we give the kids an opportunity to experience the United States and outdoors all over. We drive everywhere we go. We visit universities along the way. We have different job sites and tours. Last year, during the summer trip, we probably one of the more interesting tours we had. We toured a dairy farm. Our kids needed to have an understanding of where milk comes from, and it was quite interesting how they figured you just go to HEB and you buy your milk and that's the end of it. And so with that though, we were blessed enough to stop in, and the landowner was gracious enough to host our group and show us around and show the kids how milk was made. And so again, it gives the kids an opportunity to show them that there's more to the world than what they've seen thus far. If your environment never changes, what do you learn from that environment? It's real simple, whatever it has to offer. And our kids, they understand the very negative side of life. And so what we're trying to do is use the outdoors and show them all the positive things that life has to offer. And so I'm going to let that show, and then we open up to any questions you guys may have for us or anything. And thank you very much. It's about 10 minutes long, and I may interject during the course of it because there's some silence. Yeah, on this particular, another part of our program is we take kids offshore fishing. You'll be amazed at what they can learn about themselves when they're out there in the middle of nowhere and they don't feel very good. it's a part of that adversity. And that's kind of a little look in their environment. And a part of the program, again, is something for nothing. The responsibility of taking care of the boat, taking care of the equipment, cleaning that, all that's a part of their responsibilities. And so, again, it's a great way to teach the kids that this something for nothing mentality has got to kind of go away. That was actually a state record last year. Thank you guys for that, the youth angler record. And most of our fishing takes place out of South Padre Island, but we do travel to different locations and do that. Hunting is another part of our program. We go with the seasons. Obviously, right now we're in camping, but during the hunting season, we're able to partner with a lot of different sponsors. We teach our kids hunter safety course, thanks to the Texas Parks and Wildlife. My wife and I are hunter safety instructors, and so we teach our kids the proper way to use firearms, and so it kind of removes some of the negative thoughts about guns and how they're used. And then we're able to hunt on amazing ranches all over and help the landowners manage their herd. Rafting and kayaking, great source of exercise for inner city kids. Rafting and particularly kayaking, we do that quite often. Again, it's just another outdoor activity which removes them from the inner city and gives them an opportunity to experience different things. Traveling is a heavy part of our program because it removes the kids from their environment. And they have an opportunity to visit parks all over and different states and so on and so forth. And we visit cities from time to time. Washington's not one of our favorites. Camping. This particular camping trip was last year, and we're actually going to go on this camping trip again. This will be our 18th year hosting this camping trip. It's called Camp Hawkeye. And last year, if you can remember, during this time, we had a flood, and I was already down there, and they had to make a decision whether or not to leave with what they saw here. And true to our form, we don't give up. We just improvise and persevere. And so we decided to go in the flood. And as it turns out, it was beautiful down there, and that worked out well. And we're from Port Isabel. I mean, our camp is down in South Padre. She's from Port Isabel. I believe the mayor from Port Isabel is here. And we'll be down there this weekend, so we may visit with you guys. Camping on the beach also teaches them a lot about themselves. They have to set up camp. It's a very, very primitive camp. No facilities, sleeping on the beach in tents. Fire time is huge for us because it gives us an opportunity to talk about life and a lot of devotional time for us. And this year we'll have approximately 48 to 50 kids on this year's Camp Hawkeye. Archery. Archery is huge, and the audio for this one is kind of out of control. she was really excited. She hit a bullseye, and that's I was kind of shocked, but it worked out well. We travel university tours. The biggest part of university tours, the kids have to understand what's out there for them in order to aspire. If they don't have very much inspiration, it's very difficult for them to aspire, and so we take a lot of university tours and they eat on campus, talk about the different universities and through our different sponsors that are over different states. We are able to service projects. Again, like I was saying earlier, this is huge for our program. The something for nothing mentality is something that's kind of been ingrained, thanks to a lot of friends in our government. Excuse me, I apologize. But what we want to start with is we want to start with the youth and make them understand that, you know, anything worth having in life is worth working for. And no one's going to sit around and give you much of anything. So you got to go and work, and you got to have a plan, and you got to put it together and back that plan up with hard work. And, again, one of our ways of making sure the landowners appreciate us, we appreciate them letting us come out there is to do service projects, and it could be anything from painting to fishing to cutting down trees. This past weekend we had a service project so the kids can qualify to go to Camp Hawkeye and found some pretty interesting rattlesnakes. But this particular project, we're basically painting some pipes, painting a fence, and then we'll get to go swimming or fishing or kayaking. And again, it's just our way of saying thank you for giving us an opportunity. This actually started out as a swimming trip, turned into a reed pulling project. Summer tours. Again, we travel all over. This particular trip was to North Carolina and Washington, D.C. And we select a group of kids at the beginning of the school year, and they have to meet the qualifications in order to travel with us in the summer. They have to basically work and earn their own money. We'll find them little side jobs. They can't take a certain amount of money from their parents. In years past, some of the parents used to give the kids money. We found out that didn't work very well. And so we could all work together, particularly with the Alaska trip, because you're gone for 5 weeks with each other and you got to learn how to get along. And so they basically earn that right. And then once they've earned that right, then they have an opportunity to reap the benefits of their work. And basically, so a lot of families can't afford to send their kids on the trips as well. And so the work aspect of it is something that they want to do, then they're willing to sacrifice for that. Alaska Highway has changed over 20 years. This is actually the fourth year we've gone to Alaska. We go every 5 years. We rotate through the different states and trips. And an ATV trail riding is just kind of a blast. The kids really enjoy that. And again, it gives them an opportunity, teaches them responsibility, safety, taking care of the younger ones. And I just like to say thank you because you guys are responsible for that. Fishing, we do a lot of freshwater fishing during the springtime. We visited one of your parks. That's a great facility right there, the hatchery. And gave our kids to learn a lot about sea life and some of the things that you know, the bays in Texas have to offer. And so, again, for our kids, everything they do in the outdoors is an educational experience because they're used to asphalt and concrete, and that's what they see, that's what they understand. So to sit on the back of a four-wheeler and ride in the country in South Texas is just life-changing for our kids. This is the last getting ready to wind down here. But I do want to take this opportunity to thank Darlene Lewis. She works with your department, and she has been a really, really in the forefront of making sure that, particularly with the grant and the things that we were doing with the grant, and keeping us, making sure everything is great, and motivating us and telling other people about our program and how they could possibly do something like we're doing. So at this time, if you guys have any questions for us, I'll be more than happy to entertain any questions at all.
Any questions, Leon, from the commission? Leon, I've got a couple questions, and I think that Vice Chairman Duggins has questions. How many children have gone through your program? Do you have an idea?
We've serviced probably about, over the last 18 years, probably 2,000, 3,000 kids maybe.
Oh, wow.
Either one trip, two trips. Very few kids make it to their level, to where they stay with it. And the kids that do, though, we're hoping that those kids go on and can impact others.
Do you have any type of, your kids are going through your program, then they're going to college, is that correct?
Correct.
Do you have
correct.
Any type of scholarship funding or any help with these kids if they can get to that level?
We typically, the kids that leave state, the deal is that if they go to college, they have to leave state, and then we'll give them basically a $1,000 scholarship or leave the city, their hometown. But if they stay inside of San Antonio, then we try and give them a $500 scholarship. But as far as designated funding for that, no, they just understand that that's what's going to happen. And so, again, our goal is not necessarily get the kids to college. Our goal is to make them productive members of our society, however that may be. We've got police officers. We've got teachers. We've got coaches. I mean, so it's just an opportunity for them to be productive. And that's the thing I think a lot of kids get locked into in the inner city, is they think they have to go to college, and that's the only option. And so you lock them into that box, then they realize that academically they don't want to do that. So they're left with what we see now.
Well, what you're doing is exactly what this commission and this department want to see, getting kids outdoors, introducing them to wildlife and changing lives. You really are changing lives. We appreciate what you do, and I'll let Vice Chairman Duggan visit with you.
Will you run for office? I'm dead serious. You should consider running for office.
I'd join the
chairman in thanking you and your wife for your leadership in this state and in the San Antonio area. What you're doing is exceptional. It is exactly what we, as a group, all talk about frequently, is how do we fund more opportunities for urban families and children to get them out and experience the outdoors and what that adds to life. And I just say that as we're approaching the next legislative session, we plan to call on you. We may drag you to over here to the red building to help us secure additional funding for the types of activities that you're doing. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Commissioner, very much.
Leon, hang on. Margaret, Commissioner Martin wants to ask a question.
I wanted to reiterate what has been said here. Because of what you're doing and the commitment that you put forth and the commitment of the young kids that are participating in your group, the state of Texas will remain in the great shape it is, and you are the next stewards of our land and the stewards of our water. And it's just really important. I offer you, if there's anything, I don't live too far away from you, if there's ever anything I can do, count on me to help and participate in any way, because it's individuals like yourselves and participants like you kids that are not young men that will continue the legacy of what everybody is doing here. So commend you, and I commend the young men here that have taken the commitment, because you have other choices, and your friends or people that you are associated with may be doing other things with their lives, but not nearly as productive, and not nearly as productive for the future that you have. And it just shows immense leadership skills. And I'm going to agree with Commissioner Duggins. you know, just consider all of the above, and also consider coming and joining us to that pink building up on the hill when it's time to, you know, get more monies to help. So anyway, thank you, because you are the reason that we are here, and it makes what we do even easier, because we know that there are individuals like yourselves right along to continue the work that everybody is doing. So again, thank you so very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Commissioner Lee.
Just briefly, we had a nice opportunity to visit upstairs. This is as fine a presentation as I've seen since I've been on the commission. I just want to tell you how much we appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you guys very much.
Let me discourage you from running for office. All it'll do is just mess you up. I'm just telling you.
Okay, I may agree with you on that one.
You keep doing exactly what you're doing, because that's what we need. I am curious, how many other adults do you have assisting you or helping you in your endeavor?
We've got several parents. Let's say probably four or five parents. These are our mentors. We've got high school kids, we've got college kids, and they come back because they've been in our program for an extended period of time. These guys have been in since they've been in sixth grade. We probably have 15 or 20 older kids that come back and they help. A lot of our groups range in size from anywhere from 10 kids on a trip up to 50 kids on a trip, and depending on how many students we have, we determine the number of chaperones. What we found out in the years, and reason why we don't necessarily use parents in terms of chaperoning and guiding for our different trips, is because the parents often are the block for the kids to really engage in what they're trying to do outdoors, because the parents may have some apprehension about some of the things that they're going to experience in the outdoors. For instance, this past weekend we were on a service project and we were cleaning some brush, and I was cutting out a brush and a piece of brush, and this young man right here and my son were standing side by side, and they were watching me, and a rattlesnake runs right between the two of them from here to there. And we're taking pictures, and we took pictures and showed the parents and sent a lot of parents out. Parents are very, very apprehensive about that stuff because
because it's, and a few board members.
Yeah. And so we just and we do have a trip to where we'll invite all the parents to come out so they can kind of get a bird's eye view of what the program's about. Yeah.
Well, once again, you're to be commended.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Leon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. At this time, I'd like to inform the audience that everyone is welcome to stay for the remainder of the meeting. However, if anyone wishes to leave, now is an appropriate time to do so. We're going to take a couple of minute break, and we'll reconvene and carry on our business. All right, our first order of business is action item number one, approval of the agenda. Is there a motion for approval? Duggins? Commissioner Lee? All in favor say aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. We've already done action item number two. We actually moved Leon McNeil up to force everybody to hear an outstanding talk, and really great to hear from you, Leon. And again, thank you for coming, to you and your wife and the kids. Action item number three, recreational trail grant funding, recommended approval of trail construction, renovation, and acquisition project. Hello, Tim.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I'm Tim Hogsett from the Recreation Grants Branch of the State Parks Division. Today we're bringing forward to you recommendations for funding from the Recreation Trails Program. These are federal pass-through grants, 80% matching grants from Federal Highway Administration. Our funding availability is $3.9 million of apportionment from 2014, an additional $1.3 million of adjustments that were made due to a mistake made by the feds, and then an additional $500,000 that is available from project savings and cancellations of projects from previous years. We're required by the federal act to use 30% of these funds for off-highway vehicle projects, and the other 70% can be used for either off-highway vehicle or non-motorized projects. We had a record number of 82 applications submitted for our February 1st deadline requesting $13.4 million. All of these projects were reviewed by our State Park Trail Advisory Board, which is appointed by the Commission Chairman. Based on quality, cost-effectiveness, recreation opportunity impact, and geographic distribution of funds, the committee scored and rank ordered the projects, and that rank order can be found in Exhibit A. We typically also reserve funds for use in our state parks, and this year we're recommending $500,000 of that federal apportionment be reserved for use in state park trail development. With that, our recommendation for you this morning is funding for 38 projects recommended in Exhibit A in the amount of $5,253,655 and state park trail improvements in the amount of $500,000 is approved. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any question by the commission for Tim? Mr. Duggan.
Tim, the $500,000 proposed a $500,000 allocation for state park trail improvements. Are those non-motorized trail improvements?
Yes, they are. Okay. With the exception, we have in the past done some motorized trail work at Eisenhower State Park, but that's an ongoing project. So that's not part of the recommendation for these funds.
Okay. And a question I asked yesterday, I just think I want to reiterate, maybe it's more of a comment, that we do on the motorized trail programs where we do a match under this trail grant program, we do require and monitor noise abatement controls.
Yes, through a couple of means, one through the design of the facilities and the other through rules and regulations that are implemented on site for noise limits.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions for Tim? All right, Tim, thank you. We do have five people who have signed up to speak today, as Mr. Smith said earlier. Please limit it to 3 minutes, and then I'll call the we have Joe Vega first up, and right behind him is Robert Glass. So, Robert, you'll be ready. You'll come up after Joe.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. My name is Joe Vega, and I'm your friendly mayor from the great city of Port Isabel. Before I start, I want to just introduce the delegation from Port Isabel that is here today. Today we have our city commissioner, MJ Garza, our city manager, Edward Mesa, our EDC administrator, Robert Salinas, our grants writer, Margie Jacobs, and our marketing director, Valerie Bates. I just came here to simply say thank you to y'all for your partnership. We have a grant. We submitted a grant, and it's recommended for funding. This is a grant. This trail project is going to connect a city park to a county park, which we want to hopefully in the future connect all our parks with this trail, which is going to improve health awareness and recreational opportunities, thus improving the quality of life. And I just want to commend Tim Hoxett and his department. You all have a department that is second to none. Tim, thank you for all your hard work. I know every time we knock on their doors and reach out to them, the communication has been great, and we appreciate all your hard work, Tim. And I also want to just congratulate Mr. Andy Goldblum on his retirement. It looks like while he was traveling the state of Texas, he found the Fountain of Youth, because he looks pretty young. But congratulations, Andy, and we work closely with Andy as well. And again, thank you very much for everything, and we appreciate your partnership, not only on this project, but on many projects that we work together. God bless you all.
Thank you, Mayor Vega, and all the constituents that came with your partners that came with you. Thank you all. Robert Glass, and behind Robert will be Larry Winkler.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. I am, so if you can see this map, I and my family own the property north of White River Lake. It's approximately 33 sections. We surround the lake on its west, north, and east boundaries. And I'm here to ask you not to fund this. And it's number one, I don't want the fire hazard that extra traffic brings. We're a long way from the real fire department. I'm my own fire department, basically. But interestingly, we also own another piece of property approximately 10 miles to the west of the lake. It's 20 sections. 18 sections of that is leased to the Lubbock Trail Riders, which is out of Lubbock, Texas. They are a dirt bike trail club. They have approximately 100 members, but it's a family member. So there's 100 families in membership there. And they have leased this property from us for the past 10 years. And they tell me that it is the largest piece of private property that a dirt bike trail club leases in the United States. It's been my observation in working with them that a family will sign up. There's a new excitement. They'll come down and ride. But when the new wears off, they don't hardly come back. And I'm here to contrast the business models that have been proposed to you in the White River Lake trail system versus what I have seen in riding habits for the last 10 years. I don't know if any of you have been to Lubbock, Texas over the last 6 months, but there's neither man nor beast that wants to get out in a howling blizzard or a dust storm. And what I notice is that after the new has worn off, and because this is a family event, the other activities of their school children distract them from coming riding. And so really the only time these people come down to ride from the nearest urban center is in the fall when the weather's pleasant and the spring when the wind quits blowing. My lease is set up to where I get paid whether they come down or not, as opposed to the ticket sales that are supposedly going to be generated on an as-come basis at White River. And so I can tell you, gentlemen and ladies, that this is not going to generate the type of money that has been proposed at the lake board meetings. And this is based on personal experience, and I can go into greater detail if you would like. But I would urge you that it's not going to be the return that you think that has been proposed that we have heard it's going to be. And this particular club is going to open up ATV membership as well, so there's going to be some competition, I would say. But overall, if I were standing before you as a bank, would you consider loaning me the money for the ATV trail at White River versus the model that I have set up? Thank you for your time, and I'll be glad to answer any other questions that you might have.
All right. Any question for Mr. Glass, Mr. Duggan?
Exactly which project are you opposing? Is it number 29, the White River Municipal Water District?
Yes, sir.
But that's not recommended to get any grant. According to my sheet, number 29 shows zero funds recommended by staff.
That is the case. Mr. Vice Chairman, however, there was a previous grant awarded a couple of years ago that's in the planning phase. This would have been a phase two of that project.
But my question is, there's nothing today that we...
Nothing's recommended today for funding for White River. That's correct.
Well, I beg your pardon. For the talk that we hear from the lake manager, it's a done deal. And so that's why I'm here. So,
I'm not being critical, and
sure.
We appreciate you're always, anybody's welcome. We love hearing from people pro or con, but I'm just pointing out there was an application by the White River Municipal Water District in Crosby County, and the application requested $381,000, and staff is recommending zero. So that there's nothing for us today to deny because there's no recommendation for any funding. Now, at some later date, staff may propose that, and you should come back, you and anybody else who wants to speak in opposition, and you should also feel free to communicate your concerns to Tim because he's outstanding. He and his people listen.
Okay, great. Well, I beg your pardon. We're
happy to have you. I just wanted to be. I was confused by what you were against.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay.
All right, Robert. Well, thank you for coming.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Next up is Larry Winkler. Following Larry, We have David Tate.
I'm another landowner from White River, and I acquired several names from the same deal, and it all pertains to the same thing. But we're just here to say that there's nobody there in that area would like to have this there. The city of Spur, all the landowners, all the adjacent landowners, all of the landowners around outside the inner area, and there's been a lot of misinformation coming out of the White River board. They have indicated to us that we just wants to shut up and sit down, that it's a done deal. They done have $1.1 million in their pocket, and we just wants to be quiet. But I'd like to leave these names with y'all, and there's phone numbers that you can verify.
Okay, well, sorry.
But I just would like to reiterate, we did not know that this was not pertaining to our deal, and I appreciate you listening to me.
Well, we appreciate you coming, Mr. Winkler, and I'm sure that if there is another proposal, that y'all's comments will be taken into consideration, yours and Mr. Glass's comment. David Tate.
Mr. Chairman, can I?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'd just like to get clarification. Is there some previous grant that was granted in the White River Municipal Water District?
We do have a grant that was granted, I think, about a year ago for initial development of an off-highway vehicle trail project.
Okay,
and it was duly submitted and reviewed, and we recommended funding, and the commission approved funding for that, and that project's currently in the planning phase.
Okay.
And there will be additional public hearings held. There have been several public hearings held up on the site, and additional public hearings will be held as the development plan moves forward. We're going to try to make sure that landowners' concerns are taken into consideration in that development. No funds have been expended yet, though.
Okay, that's where I just want to make sure I'm clear. Previous grant has been allowed. It's in the planning phase, so the previous grant, the funds have not yet been expended. Is that what you're saying?
That is the case, yes, sir.
But they've been approved to be expended.
Yes.
And this grant that is before us today, which has not been approved or recommended for approval, was additional funds in addition to what has been previously granted.
That is correct. They were proposing a second phase of their project.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure, because I didn't want the landowners who've come to testify today to think that they've been misrepresented. There has been a previous grant, and I wanted to make sure. Okay. All right.
All right. Thank you. Next up is David Tate. And David, you might let us know, I'm sure you will, what project that you're speaking for.
The White River Municipal Water District off-road ATV project. One, I want to thank you all for allowing me the opportunity to speak. My name's David Tate, and I've been a White River homeowner for 17 years. And I guess part of the problem is there was like a $176,000 grant that was approved by y'all. I think it was in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. Either none or very little of those funds have been utilized. And then they had another grant that they had applied for that was about $500,000. I could be a little off on that I think had was tied up because of the Fed money. They redid the way you do paperwork to get the funding. And then the last grant they applied for, which was $477,000, that has not been approved at all, you know, and that's still outstanding. In 3 hours' time, we got 2.5 pages of homeowners that are all homeowners at the lake that signed a petition against the ATV trail there, because the ATV trail is going to be right where the houses are on the east side where everyone resides. And I could give this to whoever. But it has everyone's name and their lot number at the lake for verification. If the commission decides to go through with the ATV trail grant, it's currently on the east side, which would have to go through. You'd have to widen 1.5 miles of road to get to where the park's going to be that people would camp out. On the west side, you'd have to widen no roads. You'd have to move 7 telephone poles on the east side to none on the west. And if it goes in on the east side, it'll literally go by every homeowner on the east side before it gets to their staging area. And on the west side, you wouldn't go by anyone's homes. The chairman of the White River Municipal Water District Board announced at the public meeting in post that the White River Board does not care whatsoever what the homeowners and the adjoining ranchers' concerns are on this. That is the mindset of Tom Fulton, who is the district manager as well. Tom informed the White River Board that Steve Thompson would retire more than likely shortly, and there wouldn't be anyone to do any inspections for the next 20 years as far as maintaining and keeping it open, the ATV trail. Tom Fulton, the manager, announced to the White River Board when he first came out with this, it needed to be kept under wraps where there wouldn't be any opposition from the adjoining ranchers and homeowners. The time's up. Anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I know Steve Thompson has been very helpful in coming to the White River and going over a lot of this with us. I appreciate the commission's time.
Thank you, Mr. Tate. Tim, I'm going to suggest that these gentlemen have traveled a long ways to be here. While the three of them are here, and we have one more speaker, I'm not sure what they're going to talk about, but maybe you would have a few minutes to visit with them and just get a little more detail of their concerns. Okay, thank you. If you gentlemen have time, I know you've traveled a long ways, Mr. Hogsett, we'll spend a few minutes and just get a better understanding of what all your concerns are. Last one to speak is Tom Moreland. Oh, I'm sorry. We have a question, or we have a comment from Commissioner Scott.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to make something clear to all these nice folks that have come this distance. As recently as the last meeting before, we do definitely pay attention to the current and all the local landowners. So don't think that we don't hear what you're saying. We do definitely take into account very, very much to heart what the locals say. So I just wanted y'all to be aware that we do pay attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Dick. Tom Moreland.
I'm Tom Moreland. I reside out at, my wife and I have our second home out at White River Lake. That was a dream come true for us. It's a big deal to be able to have a place to go and have fun and ride around. However, we have a little different situation out at in West Texas. We've got newspaper articles that have been published in all kinds of papers talking about water. We're out of water. Texas drought. That's also been CNN has done a piece on that. So has Fox News, 60 Minutes, and Dateline. The drought in West Texas is historic. It's 100 years historic. And of all people, y'all, we're singing out of the same hymn book. I know you know that if that's true. To have an ATV trail out there at White River Lake on the east side, you pass 85 houses before you get to the gate. My house is less than 1,000 yards from the southern boundary of the park. And from the outer road to Campground 2, I'm 165 yards away, and so is 30 other people. So we're talking about dust pollution, we're talking about noise pollution, and we're talking about an extreme fire hazard. And so I would just like to tell you that those are some things that we have talked about in our board meetings and tried to get across to the board members, who we definitely respect. They are in control of the White River Municipal Water District, and that's where we get our water from. So we're very, very sensitive to those people as well. But we don't feel like we've even been listened to or heard. And I tell you, I just don't want an ATV trail in my backyard. I spent 35 years trying to get a cabin out there. I just thank the good Lord for that opportunity, but I don't want the pollution out there. And I thank you for listening to me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Boylan. We are listening to you, and I suggest you meet with Mr. Hogsett also, just at wherever you want to get it set up, Tim. All right. Let me see. Excuse me. That's all that have signed up to talk on this issue. So, any more comments from the commission? Is there a motion for approval? Mr. Morian and Commissioner Scott, second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Moving on, action item number four, public. You're welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
All right, action item number four, public hunting program. Establishment of an open season on public hunting lands and approval of public hunting activities on state parks. Linda Campbell, make your presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. For the record, I'm Linda Campbell, and I'm a program director for private lands and public hunting. Parks and Wildlife Code Chapter 12, Subchapter A, provides that attractive land purchased primarily for a purpose authorized by the code may be used for any authorized function of the Parks and Wildlife Department if the commission determines that multiple use is the best utilization of the land's resources. Additionally, Chapter 81, Subchapter E, provides the commission with the authority to establish open seasons and authorizes the executive director to determine bag limits, means and methods, and conditions for taking wildlife resources on public hunting lands, which includes units of the state park system designated as public hunting lands. I'm requesting your action on establishing an open season on public hunting lands, which allows the department to hold public hunts during the upcoming hunting season beginning September 1st, 2014. Also, statute requires the commission to approve public hunting activities on units of the state park system. In your commission booklets, you were provided with the proposed state park hunts on 45 units of state park lands for the 2014-15 hunting season. There are a total of 1,563 hunt positions proposed on parks, of which 312 are youth positions. This year, the Albert and Bessie Kronkowski State Natural Area will hold public hunts for the first time. Preliminary hunt proposals were developed last fall through a joint effort of field staff of the state parks and wildlife divisions, and public hunting program staff maintain a close communication with the park staff to confirm the hunt recommendations and make needed adjustments. Most of the recommended state park hunts addressed management needs to control deer numbers and remove exotic animals and feral hogs. However, some of the hunts, for example, those for dove, waterfowl, squirrel, rabbit, turkey, and javelina, are proposed to provide additional recreational opportunity. Staff is requesting approval of the following motions. Number one, Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes an open season on public hunting lands to run from September 1st, 2014 to August 31st, 2015. And second, Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the public hunting activities contained in Exhibit A to take place on units of the state park system. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Linda? Linda, I'll say, as I said yesterday, what you're doing is right in the direction this commission wants to go. Let's find all the hunting opportunities we can on our state properties, along with not closing down too much for camping and the other activity to go on. But a 1,000 hunting opportunities, over 1,000?
Yes, 15, these are special permits on state parks. Yeah, over 1,500.
Well, that's great. That's very good.
Yep,
thank you.
Yep. All right.
We have nobody signed up to speak on this. Is there a motion for approval? Commissioner DeJoya? Commissioner Duggan, second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, this motion carries. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, sir.
Action item number 5, exotic species rule amendments regarding draining water from vessels and portable containers, recommended adoption of proposed changes. Ken.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. My name is Ken Krasowski, the Inland Fisheries Division, and today I'm here to ask for your approval to changes to the rules on draining water in vessels. As you know, we've had rules in place since December that require water to be drained from vessels leaving and approaching public water, and this includes any water that would be taken up into live wells, bilges, or any other receptacles while those vessels are out on public waters. Currently, that applies to public water bodies in 47 counties. We started in those 10 counties up in the 17 counties up in the Dallas metro area, and then once zebra mussel unfortunately were found in Belton, we sought to expand that to additional counties. We do have some exceptions written into that to allow various activities to take place while still maintaining and protecting that our goal of not having water transferred off or to those water bodies within those areas. Based on what we've seen with the zebra mussels moving within Dallas Metro and then into Lake Belton, a prudent step would be to expand those restrictions to all the public fresh water in all counties in the state, and we'll maintain all the current restrictions and exemptions as we have in the current rules. As I discussed with you yesterday, a public comment, we did have received 48 comments on that. And the support and oppose have been similar to previous actions that we've taken on these rules, and also the comments that we received are similar to what persons had expressed in previous actions. So, if there are any comments or questions at this time,
any question for Ken, the commission? Thank you, Ken. We do have one. Person that signed up to speak on this, Will Kirkpatrick, please come up.
Good morning. My name is Will Kirkpatrick, and I'd like to address the issue of zebra mussels and their spread into Texas waters. It's our understanding zebra mussels are a result of the flushed ballast water from vessels in the St. Lawrence Seaway. Then they went to the Great Lakes, and they've continued to move south, and now we've got them in Texas. There's been nothing that's really kept them from spreading so far. With the number of freshwater fishing events we are experiencing all over the country, I fail to see any curtailment here in Texas without stringent controls being put in place. Effective control must be related to actual enforcement of regulations yet to be put in place, and without that, I don't see much success. With past observance of the lack of giant Sylvania law enforcement, positive results aren't that encouraging. On my home waters of Sam Rayburn, there were several hundred events each year, some of these consisting only a few anglers, while others are several hundred boats coming in throughout the nation. One annual big bass event, which consists of several thousand anglers, resulted in Rayburn having giant Sylvania spread to every one of its boat ramps, and I don't think there was a citation issued. That same event this year had over 5,000 anglers from 39 states. With 3-day entry fee, they took in $1,300,000, and there was not a thing said about invasive species or the handling of fish. The majority of today's anglers fishing for money events on our state's waters don't even use the rudimentary catch and release procedures set up by not only us but the others, and I fail to see that they're going to do anything about draining and sterilizing of their boats. You've got a copy of the protocol the Parks and Wildlife has set up. The problem with this is in a bell management training that I went to, they said just because you know doesn't mean they know. So I'm assuming you don't know anything about it. And I'm not being smart, just assuming you don't. The boat drain plugs are set up about an inch to an inch and a half above the sump. So you've got water in there. Taking the plug out does not get all the water out. You can't get underneath there. There is a platform on bass boats, and this is the major we're talking about. There's a platform. Sitting on that platform can be up to four batteries, your oil reservoir, which is normally 2 gallons, an onboard charger. In order to get to the sump, you've got to take that all those out, move the board, then you can get to the sump. Outboard motors, when you put your boat on a trailer, the outboard motor is tilted up. Very seldom do you see that outboard motor go back down vertical. 2 to 3 weeks later, you can dump that. Now, I have a boat. I live on Sam Rayburn. I've had a boat ever since 1958, so what I'm telling you is pretty accurate. Even if you have the sumps drained, if you show the bunks, or Ken shows the bunks on there, that carpeting will hold moisture for 2 to 3 days in the summertime. It'll hold 8 to 10 days in the wintertime. When all of the channels that go between the sidebars on your trailers are channel type, which means they're hollow, they've got a quarter to a 3/8 inch drain hole. All it takes is mud dauber, leaves, giant sylvania, hydrilla to get in there, and they no longer drain. Then you go to the next lake, and you put those in the water. Now, I've talked to some of the people at tournaments about this. We've been talking about zebra mussels for 7 or 8 years. It's not new. And their opinion is if we want them out of the water, we need to provide, we being state of Texas, needed to provide the method of getting it out. And I tried to call Scott Hall this morning. Scott is the director of LNBA, and I'm on the board of the Basin and Bay Panel. Couldn't get him. He's not in yet. You're not going to put a sudsy boat wash on boat ramps on Sam Rayburn Reservoir. Between the Corps of Engineers, the LNBA, and the EPA, it's not going to happen. With a tournament with 5,000 anglers in it, can you imagine what kind of a rat race you're going to have trying to get these things off? It's not going to happen, Commissioners. And who's going to pay for it? They think that either Texas Parks and Wildlife ought to pay for it or the Corps of Engineers, and you know you're not going to get any money out of the Corps of Engineers.
Well, so if you could wrap it up, problem. Please. If you could wrap it up pretty quickly, but we appreciate your comments. And you know, well, I think I own boats too, and you're right. You're probably never going to get it perfect, but we're taking the reasonable measures we can that can be handled reasonably, and I don't know if our staff has any comments they want to add to that, but you're correct, and we need to maybe look into it a little deeper. But I think what we're doing today is the first step, and then we'll have to examine if there's other things we should be thinking about.
Well, some of the states, California, if you put a boat in the water there, and I don't know how much Ken told you yesterday, it wasn't here, you don't take that boat out of the water and put it in another reservoir. Now, we don't have enough money to buy boats to put in all the reservoirs. So, you know, it's not going to stop.
Any questions for Will? Thank you. Thank you, Will. Yes. Ken, you have any comment on...
the actions we're taking are the ones that we can reasonably take. We know there's a certain amount of water in certain types of vessels that you just can't get at by draining the plugs. So you'd have to apply pumps, other things. We're hoping by reducing that volume to the smallest possible volume, that it'll certainly lessen the chance. And you know, this is the steps we can reasonably take at this time, as you said. So,
thank you.
A quick question, Ken, that actually Craig may be better suited to answer, but what are our current plans for enforcing this rule, assuming it passes, at tournaments, which are going to, of course, predominate in East Texas? If somebody could just summarize what our plans are there.
I'll let Brandy get to the details, but like anything else, Commissioner, we're going to start out with information and education first, and obviously we can't check every boat, you know, with the resources we have, but it is important to us, and hopefully, like any regulation, we're looking for voluntary compliance. But
for the record, my name is Brandy Reeder with the Law Enforcement Division. Currently, we are working with Inland and with our Communications Division to continue outreach efforts. We actually had an operation, I guess it was 2 weekends ago, in which I believe it was somewhere around 433 vessels were contacted, most of which seemed to actually know. And these contacts were done by law enforcement. And most of the public that were contacted did actually already know about and understood the upcoming zebra mussel regulations and the ones that were currently enacted in their areas. So, again, we continue to work with the Communications Division and Inland Division to notify and inform the public. As far as tournaments themselves, it'll be the same as what we've always done. We will try to make the best presence that we can. Obviously, our efforts are diversified, but we will put as our best effort forward to try and make sure that we do have a presence at some of these larger scale events, which we normally do.
Well, it seems to me that this is a great opportunity to get out front with the tournament sponsors and directors and impress upon them how important this is to the state and give them, see if they wouldn't commit to advise each of the participants of this rule and then have some extra people out there for the next year or two to kind of get this message across and where people get it quickly, hit them. If you hit saturate a tournament, if you will, then since these anglers go from tournament to tournament, it seems like the message is more likely to be received if we could do something like that. I would encourage us to think about that.
We can do that.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. I agree with Commissioner Duggan. And these tournaments, they put out rules. It'd be nice in the rules. Maybe they have at the bottom read, you know, kind of outstate the law. And secondly, are we putting up any type of educational signs at boat ramps at lakes around the state, or do we plan to let the public know what the law is and what the concerns we have are?
Yeah, real quick, Josh Havens, Communications Director. We do have 56 new boat ramp stencils going on to add on top of the 82 that we already had. We also have an entire marketing campaign that kicks off. Our press conference kicks off tomorrow. The radio is already gone.
Right.
We got advertising, radio, digital. I mean, you name it, we are out there.
I mean, that catchy little song we heard yesterday?
The catchy little songs on radio and on Pandora. Yeah.
Can we hear it again?
I've been
singing in the back of my head all night.
A clean drain, dry your boat.
That's good. Okay, right. Thank you. All right, good discussion. Ken?
Well, as we heard mentioned, you know, our public awareness, we touched on that a little bit in the past, that we're in the Dallas metro area where we focused those efforts over the last few years when we've gone out and surveyed anglers, their knowledge of zebra mussels and the clean, drain, dry is up in the 90%. And we, you know, when we move to other parts of the state where it hasn't been as much of an issue, it's less. So we certainly have been having an impact. You know, we've been focusing on the Dallas-Fort Worth area where the initial problem is, and that campaign that Josh talked about will be spreading in more parts of the state. So we're hoping to increase that awareness.
All right, Ken, thank you. Any more questions? Thank you.
Okay, so if there are any further questions, staff will recommend that the commission adopts the amendments to 57-1001 concerning the statewide recreational commercial fishing proclamation as the text was published in the April 18th edition of the Texas Register.
So moved.
Jones and Commissioner Duggan second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion passed.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Action item number six, proposed amendment to rules governing permit to sell non-game fish taken from public fresh waters. Recommended adoption, proposed changes. Brandy, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, my name is Brandy Reeder again, for the record, with the Law Enforcement Division. Law enforcement has become aware of an issue regarding the interpretation of 57.379 regarding non-game fish permits. The current wording of the rule has been interpreted to mean that commercial fishermen and fish dealers alike must possess a non-game fish permit to sell non-game fish taken from public freshwater of the state. This is an inaccurate interpretation, as the purpose of the permit is to ensure minimal to no impact on sensitive or critical fish species. Commercial fishermen during harvest, during the harvest of allowable non-game species, fish dealers are not a concern in this situation. Staff seeks to clarify the language in 57.379 to clearly state only commercial fishermen, as defined in Parks and Wildlife Code Chapter 47, are required to obtain the non-game fish permit to allow the lawful sale of captured non-game fish. Fish dealers will be clearly exempted from this requirement, enabling easier interpretation and application of the law. Sorry, skipped a slide. Public comments from online revealed 13 in support, 2 in opposition. Only 1 in opposition actually left a comment, which was not really applicable to this change. With that said, staff recommends the, or wait a minute, let me back up. Would the staff have any questions? I mean, would commission have any questions? Apologize.
Mr. Duggan.
What is meant by aquatic products as it's in this proposed language?
Aquatic products is a very broad definition. It's any live, dead, unfrozen, or frozen, uncooked aquatic resource.
So does it include non-game fish?
Yes, sir.
Well, do you interpret the rule to mean that if a person were at Toledo Bend, for example, and seining shad, and they took shad, which of course belonged to the state, and then took them down the road 15 miles and sold them to Joe Blow, private landowner, to put in a private lake, does that person have to have a commercial license and a permit?
Yes, sir.
Well, I just don't understand why we have proposed B in here. Maybe I'm just thick, but I don't understand it. I'm confused.
What it is it's just to clearly define the difference between a harvester and a individual that only sells aquatic products. So again, it's just to clarify that if you are harvesting aquatic products, the purpose of the non-game fish permit was to track any impact on critical non-game fish species. So the allowable species that they allow to harvest, they track means and methods used, number of fish harvested, location that fish are harvested. And so, again, really the concern is with the harvesters, the dealers, where they're buying from the harvesters. So that's why B is in there. It's clearly defined that dealers are exempt.
But if...
Because dealers cannot catch. They can only...
So a dealer is a reseller in your mind?
Correct.
Okay. Well, as I told you yesterday, I think that there are a number of people who are harvesting bait fish from state waters and selling them in private lakes, and that's okay if we want to do it, but I just want to encourage us to look hard at what we're charging for that, because they're making a lot of money on state goods, if you will, or state fish. At least that's what I'm hearing anecdotally in East Texas, so I think we ought to look hard at that.
Yes, sir.
Commissioner Duggan, are you comfortable with voting on what we're proposal now, or would you like it looked at? This is not something that's pressing, I don't think, Carter's. What's your feeling? Are you comfortable with the language?
Well, Ann, I'd ask you. I'm not sure we couldn't make it clearer about who's wearing which hat here. But again, it may just be me. I've read it too many times. I don't know.
It's not just you. Part of the issue is that there are a number. At least in my view, part of the issue is that there are a number of permits that are set up statutorily, and it's trying to make sure that all of those mesh. I mean, there are some activities that may require one or more, or one, or just two, and we've kind of got that issue here. I mean, there's been some confusion here, and this is really an intent to, I think, clean up some of the language. One of the things that we may want to look at doing down the road is going back and looking at the whole set of rules here. And just FYI, there is a big effort, I know, on exotic species to clean up some of those rules. I'm not sure that's very helpful.
Well, are you comfortable with the language?
I'm comfortable with the language.
Well, maybe that's the way to go then, as a part of a major review, that we look at it again at that time.
I agree.
So with that clarification, I'm okay with it. Thank you for asking.
Okay. Thank you, Brandy. Thank you, Ann. We don't have anybody signed up to speak on this. Any more questions for Brandy? Thank you, Brandy.
Okay. Well, with that, staff recommends the commission to adopt the amendment as published in the April 18th edition of the Texas Register.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a motion?
Second.
Morian, and who's the second?
Jones.
Okay. I don't want to get this wrong again. We've already got it wrong once today. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passed. Action item number 7, deer management permits and trapping, transporting, and transplanting permit regulations. Recommend adoption of proposed changes.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. For the record, I'm Alan Kane, Whitetail Deer Program Leader. This morning, I'll be presenting several proposed changes to the deer management permit and trap, transport, and transplant permit regulations to be considered for adoption this morning. First change is in regards to release of deer from a DMP pen and also permit expiration. Current regulation requires that all deer within a DMP pen must be released on or before the date specified on the permit. And the regulations also state that DMP permit is valid through the release date specified on that permit. It's not uncommon for permittees to release deer sooner than that date specified on the permit in preparation for trapping deer for the upcoming season. However, when that happens, it creates some operational complications for department staff and then also potential permit violations for those permittees in the upcoming DMP permit season. In order to clarify the confusion, staff recommend regulation change to require the permittee to report the release date of deer from a DMP pen within 48 hours of release. And I'd like to note this is different than what's published in the Texas Register, which we had 24 hours previously, and with public comment and some last-minute recommendations from the Texas Deer Association leadership and y'all's input yesterday, we changed that to 48 hours is what staff would recommend for the reporting requirement. The regulation of staff would also, the change would also clarify regulation to state that a permit is valid from the date of issuance through the release date specified on that permit or the date of release, whichever is sooner. The next change is in regards to replacement of a buck deer in a DMP pen. Current regulations prohibit the trapping of deer under a DMP permit between December 15th and August 31st. This also prohibits the trapping and movement of deer into a DMP pen after the trapping deadline for a particular ecoregion. This is problematic when a buck dies in a DMP pen after the trapping deadline has occurred but before breeding has occurred in that pen. Therefore, the permittee may not be able to take advantage of the intent of the permit or the significant investment they had in the permit fee as well as the trapping of those deer. Staff therefore recommend to amend the regulation to allow the replacement of only a buck deer that has died in a DMP pen through January 31 of the current permit year. In addition, the permittee would be required to report to mortality in TPWD's online system, our TWIM system, before replacing that buck, and also indicate their intent to replace that deer in the online system. The next change in regards to the conditions under which a Triple T permit may be issued, current rule prohibits the department from issuing a Triple T permit to move deer when deer held under a deer management permit have been released in the same permit year. Staff propose to remove this prohibition. Staff see no biological concerns as the source of deer for a Triple T permit and DMP permit is from the same property unless they're introduced via another Triple T permit or a deer breeder permit. And this would provide flexibility for landowners to meet their deer management objectives on their properties. The last change is a minor housekeeping change with regards to the DMP permit application process. Staff recommend removing language indicating incomplete application will be returned to the applicant. We've gone to an online system with TWIMS, and so the system no longer allows an application to be returned, and it must be completed or corrected before they can continue on with the application process. So just removing some of that language. We've had a little bit of public comment on both proposals. The Triple T changes, we had 11 total comments, 8 agree, 3 disagree. Those that disagreed, some just didn't like the permit. Others indicated that they thought the change would create a lack of oversight from Parks and Wildlife and create the conditions in which somebody may sell deer or move deer illegally. On DMP changes, we had 18 total comments, 10 agree, 8 disagree. Some just simply didn't disagree with the DMP permit concept, which is not relevant to these changes. Others, again, with the need for the department to continue to notify people incomplete applications, not relevant since the online system takes care of that. And we did have some change, one recommendation to extend the release date, which we did to 48 hours. So if that concludes my part of the presentation. If y'all have some questions, I'll be happy to answer those.
Commission, have any questions for Allen? Allen.
All right. If not, staff recommends the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt amendments to Chapter 31 of the Texas Administrative Code, Section 65-103 concerning trap, transport, and transplant permits, and 65-132, 65-135, and 65-136 concerning deer management permits with changes as necessary to the proposed text published in April 18, 2014 Texas Register.
Thank you, Alan. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Jones and Duggan second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Final item, action item number 8, acceptance of donation, Palo Pinto County, approximately 120 acres at Palo Pinto Mountain State Park. And who's going to make this presentation this morning?
The floor's open for volunteers.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This first slide is a picture of Tucker Lake, which is just a gem, a beautiful 90-acre lake situated in the heart of the new Palo Pinto Mountain State Park. State Park staff has been working. The park, by the way, is about 70 miles west of downtown Fort Worth and currently in the planning stages. State Park staff has been working very closely with the city of Strawn, which owns a buffer around that lake and the lake proper, to effect some sort of management agreement that would allow us to include that land in the planning and development of the state park. Because of that wonderful working relationship that state park staff has developed, it's been concluded by the city that really works best for them and for us is to donate all those uplands, all that land adjacent to the lake, to Texas Parks and Wildlife to facilitate our management, to facilitate our planning, to facilitate the construction of any infrastructure that might be built there to increase public access to that lake for fishing, swimming, paddling. whatever recreation. And as a result, staff does come to you this morning with a recommendation that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorize the executive director to take all necessary steps to accept the donation of approximately 121 acres in Palo Pinto County for addition to Palo Pinto Mountain State Park. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Ted? Yeah, I've got a couple questions. What are our plans now that we're going to accept this donation and have this lake frontage? Do we have plans to develop it? And secondly, is there boating taking place on the lake? Is there boat ramps?
Sure.
is this a premature question? Have we got that far?
Ted, you mind if I jump in and throw you a life rope here? we're currently in the throes of a public use plan. Right now, members of the community are using the lake for kayaking, and that's really what it's more appropriate for is canoeing and kayaking, maybe small boats with small motors on it. And so there's certainly some access that the city has provided for that. But we're basically going to fold this property into the whole public use plan and look at that in the aggregate in terms of the recreational amenities that we ultimately want to provide there and then ultimately develop. So certainly that'll be considered.
Are there fishing opportunities on the lake?
Yeah, you bet. Yep.
And I agree with Carter.
Thank you, Ted. Any more questions for Ted? All right, Ted, thank you. Is there a motion for approval? Duggan, second. Martin, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. With that, motion carries. And Mr. Smith, this commission has completed its business, and I declare us adjourned.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.